mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 442. And Kirby has just asked me to do the sound levels, so I'm just checking. Oh, yeah, it's not coming up with anything, Kirby, because you're not saying anything. So I better say, okay, and I'm here is Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
If only we still had the sonic screwdriver.
That's not one of the quotes, is it?
Yes.
Is it? Oh, I missed that one. And Mary Lang.
Look at me.
I didn't do a quote because I couldn't think of one. I might have to nip out and get some painkillers.
Master?
Yes?
The sonic screwdriver line is while they're
trapped in the cell.
The little prison cell.
Yes, I thought it might be that. That's when it may have been said.
Yeah, I laughed at that because I I thought it was so funny.
Ooh, phone's ringing.
Yeah, that was my phone. Sorry.
Right. So yeah. So today, after I've nipped into the kitchen to get some painkillers for my sore tongue, which I must have bitten during the sleep, we will be discussing Snake Dance and probably coronavirus somewhere along the line, because it seems to be quite topical at the moment, doesn't it? And of course, people that listen to this podcast going back in time will probably think, "Oh, I remember coronavirus." No, they won't. They'll be thinking of horror and thinking how lucky they are to be back in a normal life. Right, I'm just going to go and get some ibuprofen. You two chat amongst yourselves and a reason that may entertain our listeners. I'll be back in a moment.
You should have gotten that before you started the
Well, when I started talking, I realized it hurt.
I was going to say that my daughter, who lives in Chicago, when they had one really nice day there, the parks, which are all along the riverfront, and were just packed. People, you know, biking and walking and skating and, you know, you name it. There were so many people out there, you know, trying to get fresh air and enjoy, you know, the lake and everything, that the city of Chicago has shut it down now. So now people will get ticketed if they show up at any of the lakeside parks.
Ah.
Just kind of sick, because that's like the whole length of the city.
Oh, yeah. I used to live about two blocks in from the lakeshore.
Yeah. So, yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, you know what that lakeshore looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Today, full of people. So, yeah, now it's empty.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's crack on. Right. Lillian Robbins said that. Oh. Hey, what?
I said, there you are.
Lillian Robbins says, there you are. I thought you'd forgotten about the time change. No, it's not that, Lillian. We were just having a chat about things, topical things in the media and stuff. Right then. So I'm going to just open up my DVD thingy. There it is. And we'll get straight on with A Dancing of the Snake and hope that Debbie Melrose may indeed join us at some point after she's had her dinner, because I think she alluded, oh look, it's Doctor Who, she alluded to the fact that she'd forgotten about the top clocks going forward. So she's done a bit of a Kirby and forgot
what
about
you mean?
The clocks. Well, you notoriously forgot about the clocks once, didn't you?
Oh.
In the middle of a convention, I seem to remember.
Yeah, but the part that I do have an excuse.
Yes, well,
I was in a different time zone than usual
I'm
as well.
Still not sure you're allowed to use excuses
without
Reese's permission.
Permission from Reese, yeah.
All right then, so episode one. I hope this thing can move a bit faster than normally does. Begins with moving forward, a very spooky sort of, it's almost like the beginning of Monty Python's Flying Circus, but instead of the old bloke running towards the camera shouting, it's the camera sort of zooms into said chap, and he's got the Titanic crystal sort of hanging around his neck. Obviously, it hasn't got to Rose at this point, and it's not been turned into a sort of heart-shaped thing.
That's a complete master.
Yes.
That completely goes over my head, because I'm one of the few people who's never seen Titanic.
I'd watch it. It's a good film.
I understand the boat sinks.
Well, that's obvious. But apparently,
he gave away the ending.
Yeah, well, he loves a good spoiler, doesn't he? But apparently they're making a Titanic 2. I don't know how they're going to do that, but implying that Jack didn't actually die, but I think he probably would have done, to be fair. Right then. So, oh, did I give that bit away? So Sorry about that, anybody who hasn't seen Titanic, i.e. Kirby.
I don't care. I never plan to see it.
Well, I would see it because there's a few Doctor Who actors in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Probably. Doctor Who actors get everywhere. So
there are.
I was talking about Doctor Who, wasn't I? Oh, yeah. So that's quite atmospheric, that opening shot of It's Man sort of sat with his legs crossed. It's very... beautifully done, and the sort of background music and stuff that sort of added to the effect of the Alan T. Butcher says, "There you are." Sarcasm going on amongst our listener stroke viewers at the moment.
That's why we love them.
So the next scene, we cut to the TARDIS console room with Nyssa's new sort of almost like a cross between Andy Pandy and, in fact, I don't know what it is. It's a strange outfit. They could have done better, but they didn't, obviously. The Doctor isn't impressed, and quite frankly, I sort of don't blame him.
He sees it.
You don't get the joke that she doesn't really know how to dress, so she puts on that bizarre outfit?
Mm. Oh, I didn't get that joke, no, sorry.
Yeah. Mm. All she's ever worn are those velvets and everything, and I don't think she's that fashion conscious, so I think she just grabbed whatever she could in the wardrobe room.
Lillian Robbins says, "We love you guys too." Tegan, meanwhile, is having a snooze. Bit of a nightmare, though. She's having a bit of a nightmare. I think we, as the Doctor and Nyssa, sort of... The Doctor's a bit sort of slightly ratty in this episode, isn't he? To be fair.
What do you mean by ratty?
He's sort of a bit sort of touchy.
Oh, he's real touchy.
Yeah, but well, I mean, the Tom Baker Doctor was touchy on odd occasions. And
hyperactive.
Yeah. So we cut into Tegan's dream, which is quite familiar because it's Tegan in a black background, because obviously in Kinder. And then she was in the background while sort of interacting with the Rat, with the Mara. So if anybody knows the background of Tegan and the Mara, will immediately realise the Mara is involved in this story. So it's fairly early on. And she has a bit of a scream within her dream and wakes up. Yes?
I believe it's only been a year since the first one.
Probably has, yes. It was the previous series, and I don't think it was the second one of the series. It was the second story. I think it was like the third or fourth. Either way, it's a continuous sequel to Kinder. So then we cut to a chap called Martin Clunes, who is, this was his first ever TV job. And he's been lambasted. What?
No, this was not his first
TV job. We're saying it is, because that's what it said in the info text.
Yes, that's what it says in the info text. That's what it says in the commentary. But it was not. He was actually in something else a few months before.
Anyway, he's got a very funny shaped mouth. He's sort of slightly wonky with very sort of thick lips, isn't he? Sort of very strange mouth. Doesn't quite look like that nowadays because he's obviously his faces are grown around his mouth. Anyway.
Yeah, Fiona Cumings said that one of the reasons that she hired him was she was going through a book of pictures from the talent agencies and noticed his lips and said, "Oh, he's got Mick Jagger lips and that looks real good."
Splendid. Anyway, so obviously with Tegan sort of having had this nightmare.
Master,
oh, Jesus Christ.
I have a question.
Oh.
The set of the where he's coming down the spiral stairs and everything. At first, I thought that staircase was the one from the Tom Baker cactus one. But it turns out this set was borrowed from the 1981 series of A Song for Europe. Apparently, is A Song for Europe like Eurovision?
Yes,
before
it's been cancelled this year, but yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's the same sort of thing. But they just took the set and then they put drapes over it. But apparently, if you find the 1981 series of A Song for Europe, you will see that very same staircase.
Whoa, I must look out for that. Terry Mars says, "Good evening, everyone." Good evening, Terry. Right then, so then the next shot is of Martin Clunes lying on his back, as he does quite a lot of in this story until he gets sort of Mara-ized, holding on to a snake. Don't be alarmed. It's a little... like a statuette of a sort of snake type thing. It's not his own snake. And the next woman that walks into the room, pretty sure is the old sister from Call the Midwife, whose name escapes me. And she was also, I think, in Sarah Jane Adventures. The old one that goes a bit loopy from time to time in Call the Midwife. Do you know what I'm talking about? Call the Midwife. Mm-hmm. It's a drama in which Vanessa Redgrave does... What? Oh,
you mean the actress who plays his mother?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, she's not in Call the Midwife. She in... Her name is Colette O'Neill.
Oh, it's not her. That does not look like her.
She's semi-regular in Coronation Street in the 60s. And made guest appearances in Zed Cars, Dixon of Doc Green, and all those standard things.
Okay, I've got wrong, but she does look like her. I stand corrected, and it's one of the rare times I was glad I mentioned it, not that I got it wrong. Debbie Melrose has joined the viewership. Does that mean she's ready? We'll have to find out. Anyway, so Tegan's, obviously, the doctor's now concerned that Tegan's gone a bit doolally, and I think at this point decides to take her to the Mara's home planet, or she knows she is actually she programs the TARDIS to take them there, but under the guide of the Mara, who sort of makes her input the coordinates. Debbie Moro says, good evening, I'll be there shortly, but haven't watched it, so on as a layman, nearly ready. Doesn't matter, Debbie. You'll know what's happening, because I'm telling you. Isn't that clever of me, Kirby?
I want to know, has she seen it?
She just said she hasn't seen it, Kirby.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, she did just say that.
Someone sent her, she couldn't watch it.
No. I saw that part. I mean, did she see it back in the day?
No.
No, she would have been too young.
No, she's quite old, actually, Debbie. I'd say she's about 40. No, hang on. It's 1982, this go out, or something like that. So that would have made her 12, wouldn't it? Hang on, 76. No, not 12. 6. She could have seen it, but probably didn't. Anyway, I can't remember Martin Clunes' character's name. Is it Lom or Lam or something like that?
Lom,
yeah. He's a right layabout prince, isn't he? He's great. Spends so much time on his back playing with that snake. I mean, that's a snake statue, again, as I reiterate for people. Tegan, meanwhile, the doctor has sort of given her a Walkman, but with just the one earpiece in it. So apparently it's something that's going to stop her. It's almost like a dream catcher, isn't it? It's something that's going to stop her from having bad dreams and sort of... prevent her from getting taken over by the Mara again. Laurie Nick says, hi all you darling peoples, you chip. Oh, what's just going on? Oh, sorry, I got distracted by my bell going off. Hi all you darling peoples, you cheer me up after battling the supermarket zombies and getting released from the decontamination chamber. Right, is Debbie saying she's ready? Ready?
Yes.
We can add said Melrose to pot. Right then, let's see. That sounds a bit rude as well, doesn't it? We'll add her to the show. That sounds a bit better. Right then. What's her name again? Deborah Melrose. I wonder if that's the one there. I'll click on that one. Hope that's the right one. If it's not, I'll have to try the other one.
Well, when I pull up Skype, if there's a conversation already going, there's a little green thing on there that says join, so I always just click on that rather than wait for you to call me.
You can explain that to Debbie off air when eventually.
Yeah, and I've done that as well. Yeah,
all right, smarty pants.
What are you all bickering about now?
Well, the thing is, Debbie, and ladies and gentlemen, Debbie Melrose.
What's your quote?
Stop picking on her. No, basically, that Mary was saying that if you go on Skype and you see something green against someone's name, you can apparently join the conversation without being invited.
All right, I'll do that next time.
Debbie.
Uh-oh.
Debbie.
Yes.
I know you have not seen it, this one, recently, but have you ever seen it?
No, not this one, but definitely the next one and the one previous.
Okay. Right. So I've got all sorts of funny things coming up on my screen. I just don't know
what. So then, what did you think about it, Deb?
Clips and everything I've been able to watch.
Well, I'll tell you where we are, Debbie. Well, basically, we've just been introduced to Martin Clunes, who's a layabout prince. We've realised now that Tegan's still having nightmares, or starting to have nightmares about the Mara. The Doctor, she's sort of has given her this. Like an earpiece to sort of stop her from dreaming, I suppose, because every time she dreams, the Mara invades her dreams and tries to take her over a bit more. Laurie Nick said, big virtual hugs to all. So we'll carry on. Right then, so Tegan is being taken back over by the Mara that the Doctor promised wasn't in her head anymore. So we go back to the planet where there's like a marketplace. The prince has managed to get off his backside and is having a rather arrogant stroll around and interactions with people in the marketplace. And
Master, it's not just an interaction with people around the marketplace, it's interaction with Liz Sladen's husband.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I thought he might pick up on that one. But he's not actually Liz Sladen's husband in this, he's an actor playing a character within the story. Now,
I suspect that we're still married at the time.
Probably.
Therefore, he is.
Well, right. Meanwhile, the TARDIS materializes within some sort of tent. All right, lands within some sort of tent. and the three main characters step out and sort of wander around a bit. Lon is taken, that's Martin Clunes, by the way, Debbie, is taken down to sort of see some sort of snake artifacts and stuff. But while all this is going on, Tegan is in some sort of almost like a hypnotic state where she can't hear anything. And when she sees stuff, it's all a bit sort of confusing. They've shot it through almost like a Dalek eye with a slight snake eye thing. So she's looking around totally confused. And during these proceedings, they lose her, basically. And they seem to be doing tours, don't they? Down under in the caves or wherever. And there's these Egyptian stirs. Hang on, there's Egyptian style hieroglyph. And here we go. I get corrected again. What?
Specifically, because the Lon's going to have some sort of participation, even though he didn't know that at this time it wasn't going to be the weird thing that he eventually did. He was going to have participation in the ceremony, and they were trying to teach him about some of it.
Splendid.
So he's getting a private tour.
Thank you for clearing that one up. Although, obviously, when I was trying to watch this story, She Must Be Obeyed was talking about stuff unrelated to Doctor Who, and I may have got distracted. Laurie Nick said, this one has the young Dr. Martin, i.e. Martin Clunes. There's a point in which there's a beautifully constructed snake sort of entrance, the snake mouth entrance that they try to lead Tegan into, but she gets a bit scared. And as I say, when the Doctor goes in, Nyssa stands by the doorway next, supposedly to look after Tegan, but somewhere along the line, Tegan sort of takes her earpiece out. Oh, that's right. Some woman comes up to her and tries to sell her one of those old sort of style snake toys that you used to get in the 70s.
One of those ones which has the interlinks on the body and makes it move undulate?
Yeah, swings around, yeah. And she screams and runs off, taking the earpiece out of her ear.
No, she doesn't take the piece out of her ear yet. That's taken out after she faints in the marketplace.
Whatever.
And the
I'm glad you're keeping up with this. I've lost where I was now. That's right, because she's still walking around looking confused, and there's this woman looks a bit like a sort of a multicoloured nun in some ways, where she's got that headdress on, and she's going to do pretend she does fortune telling. And
I thought that was great that a fortune teller actually admits that they're fakes.
That's right. And because Tegan takes the earpiece out, she goes all Mara-ish. She starts going a bit sort of weird and Mara-ish. The Doctor and Nyssa return to the interior of the TARDIS. The fortune teller sees a sort of a skull of a snake appearing in the in her crystal ball, and then goes, ah! Which they try and sort of merge in with the sting of the title sequence. End of episode.
Master. There was narratively, there was no reason for the Doctor and Nyssa to go back to the TARDIS. That was inserted in there because not the author, but the script editor, I'm trying to remember his name, he liked short scenes, and the author of this, Christopher Bailey, I believe, wrote nice and long scenes. So they stuck the business of going back to the TARDIS in there to break this one long scene in the fortune teller up.
Anyway.
You get this from the info text.
Thank you for that. I did see try and read some of the info text on this particular occasion. Right, so like I say, they did a very short recap of the screaming number. She didn't scream for long. And did she find it amusing in the end? And the Doctor and Nyssa then leave the TARDIS and start looking for Tegan, and Tegan... Oh, sorry, Nyssa finds Tegan quite quickly. But
no, Tegan finds Nyssa.
Either way... she's
dear,
acting
Kirby.
A bit weird. She's acting a bit weird. She's not herself. And this is a bit curious to this fact. I tell you what, isn't Janet Fielding good in this? It's nice, though, because we got a little taste of what she could do in Kinder. Cause she's obviously, she plays Tegan straight, and she's Tegan, and that's that. And this is the only time you get to see what she can do as an actress when she does this sort of part. And I think this is the last time we see her playing somebody that isn't Tegan within Doctor Who. And it's nice that... You know, when Kinder was on, we just saw those dream sequences in which she became the Mara, and you saw her what she could do that way. This is more a sort of extended version of what she could do. So she's really good at this. It looks a bit odd with her boob tube on, but still, it's really good. And then we meet, and I don't know if any of you remember a comedy series called Bread. Probably not. It was an English comedy series. Set in Liverpool.
Satan?
Where the... What?
You went Satan.
In Liverpool.
Satan being in bread.
Well, I was set in Liverpool where a family would accumulate in the kitchen and put all their earnings into a China chicken. And that was bread. Basically, the money they earned was bread. And it was a family Liverpool comedy. It wasn't too bad. It was written by the same woman who wrote Live of Birds, I think.
So what character... supposedly is in this whatever you're talking about.
Oh, it's the chap with the curly hair.
The lackey.
Anyway, so there's lots of running around markets, and then we see the Doctor sort of... I started losing the plot at this point because I was getting... Somebody was talking to me while I was trying to watch the story. So the Doctor is sort of concerned because obviously this is the Mara's home planet, and it's called the Samarans, isn't it, if I remember rightly? And he said, Mara, that's in the name of the place. So he was a bit sort of concerned. And one thing I did find off-putting, there was some sort of square metallic drape thingies that they'd go in and out of and usually out of time play a sound effect.
I like that.
It was a good sound effect, but it wasn't quite in time with them going in and out of it.
No.
So Tegan, a la Mara, hides from, actually a bit of a scamp, hides from Nyssa, who's looking for her. And then she goes for a little walk around this sort of Hall of Mirrors. So this really did remind me of the old Black Gang Chine. That Hall of Mirrors is still at Black Gang Chine, but it's quite hard to find. Black Gang Chine is
they move it further and further out of the way because they think people don't like it, but it's still one of the busiest spots.
It is really good. And, they move it because wherever they put it, seems that part of the cliff seems to crumble away.
I guess so.
And I assume
that Black Gang is currently closed because of coronavirus.
Oh, no, it was there. Everybody's there having time. Of course it's bloody closed. God's sake. There's some sort of virus going around. Everything's blimmin' closed apart from shops and stuff.
Yeah, I'm now closed. That's a bit weird.
Oh, but you do the post office.
Yeah, but the trouble is they couldn't separate the shop from the post office, and the shop side is what was deemed as being unreasonable to be open, yet the post office was deemed essential. Yeah. And
couldn't they sort of fend it off?
The council just decided that we should just close completely, and we were like, but what about the service? I mean, we did what we could, but you can't stop people browsing if they're, you know, it's having to stay 2 foot, you know, 6 foot away from each other. They'd have to stand in the shop, and they didn't like that, so they closed us.
I was wondering how you were keeping yourself safe in the post office, but now I know.
It was it wasn't much fun, I must say. I'm still technically in lockdown till the 31st because obviously we all had signs and possibly had the virus, so I'm actually in quarantine a lot longer now because I've had what they think it was. And So now I've not been down there, but my colleagues have been doing everything they could. But it just wasn't safe. Money is not safe. People coming into you and coughing all over you is a norm anyway. And to have it now was terrifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad to be shut and sort of hoping we'll get fortress should this ever happen again.
It does rather look like one of my work colleagues has gone down with it, but we'll see what happens to that one. Where do we go? Oh, yeah, so the doctor is sort of having a chat with that pompous bloke. Well, it looks like he's in a museum, and there's this really cool headdress thing that's got faces on it.
Faces of what?
I think is something that the prince is going to wear at some point in the future. I don't know, some sort of ceremonial hat.
No, the prince never wears this.
It's just
an old joke of what's the title of it.
It's the five faces of something of Doctor ignorance.
There's only five faces on it, and the sixth one is when you put the headdress on.
I like that. See, this is why I inquired, because obviously I haven't seen it, and things like that always trigger me going, "Ooh, what was that?"
Yeah, but you see it coming, so it's not even funny when it happens.
Oh.
There is a point in which Tegan gets a bit sort of freaked out by the mirrors, and she is joined, a la Mara, by Elizabeth Sladen's husband. And when she looks into the mirror, she sees the skeletal snake head. And she has to remain perfectly still so that animatronics can superimpose the snake head on her head so as the Mara can talk through it.
Okay.
It's very cleverly done.
They did a much better job with the snake on her arm than they did the year before.
It's still rubbish, but they did do a better job, yeah. And there was one shot of the snake which they kept
snake
in.
Again.
No, it wasn't a giant snake now. It's just a normal sized snake.
A giant snake does appear at the end, and this time there's no CGI.
At the end? There's basically, I'm just moving forward a little bit because there's this conversation between, I could never get the characters' names apart from Lon and his mum, because it's obviously all leading up to Lon.
Brian Miller's character is Dugdale.
Yeah, I'm never going to remember that, Kirby, to be fair.
Dugdale? Okay.
So, Lon is persuaded to go down to, I'm going to call it a cave. I'm not sure it is a cave. By Elizabeth Sladen's husband.
It's a cave. Why wouldn't it be a cave?
All right, cave then, whatever. And,
well, at first he's persuaded to go to the Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah, and then he's persuaded to go down and have a meet with Tegan, stroke Mara, and the social distancing didn't work too well because they sort of shook hands and the Mara sort of basically transferred or added itself to Lon.
That's different from Kinda because the Mara would just go from person to person, and in this case it was basically in both of them.
Yes. So the Doctor, meanwhile, goes back to the TARDIS and does some sort of psychic sort of stuff with Nyssa. Nyssa gets a bit of a headache. The Doctor sort of has a bit of a nap. And he doesn't look entirely impressed with Nyssa at this point, to be fair. Nyssa's a bit whiny in some of this story, because she's too worried. Hey, where's Fine Tegan? But they do have the. Remember, we said at the beginning of the episode that sort of blue Titanic pendant thing that's not quite heart shaped. they do have this, and the Doctor's trying to use it to find the Mara a la Tegan by psychic means.
Right, yeah, that was given to them by the assistant to the official.
Okay. There is a scene in which the Doctor puts on the Walkman earpiece, and then the little blue pendant thing starts glowing while the Doctor's doing it on his own. And does he find with his mind, does he find where Tegan is?
No, that's not what he's trying to do. He's just trying to see if it is psychic at all.
I see. Thank you for that, Kirby. So then we see, obviously, that Lon and Tegan have teamed up now, and they sort of tend to walk around holding hands quite a lot. And you can see, actually, I have to give Martin Clunes a bit of a shout-out, but you can see why he's had a very successful career since this, because he's very good.
He's very good.
He's
good in this. He must have been only about 2021 when this was made, and he's got the presence, the screen presence of a much older actor, quite clearly. He's brilliant. So their performances do carry quite a lot of the story.
Yeah, it looks like he was 20 when it was made and 21 when it came out.
Yeah. So the Doctor ends up getting... thrown in a cell again, but he has befriended the chap from Bread, and then we see a few little flashbacks to its man meditating in the what looks like a sort of like a desert with a temple there, beautifully shot scenes.
There's another its man in this. Cool.
Here's another its man. Yeah. But they're beautifully shot. They're very atmospheric, as I've said earlier on. That, and sort of dreamlike. I suppose it has to be quite dreamlike.
Master,
for Christ's sake! What?
That is that part was done on film at that other studio. I'm trying to remember the name of the other studio. Whereas most of this is
Elstree.
On tape.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't care. Right,
what
then.
Did you say?
What? Elstree? Pinewood?
No.
Don't care. All right then. Long comes back to have a chat with his mum, he's carrying something in his hand behind his back, and I think it's almost like he's going to kill her.
No, I never got that impression.
Okay, I don't know. I got a funny. She was in danger at some point.
Is this where she's wearing that hideous dress?
Or the sort of blue thing with the gold trimmings. Oh, it's not purple, isn't it?
No, it's when we get to that flowered and pink monstrosity. So I guess that hasn't happened yet, okay.
No. The Doctor is in prison, and this is a point in which I think he must have said some... Because he can't get out because he hasn't got a sonic screwdriver. I think that's basically
yes.
But he does start manipulating a few people at this point, including the chat from Bread. And then she does, the woman you're talking about does wear this sort of hideous dress and a very, very fetching headpiece. And then we see this very weird scene in which the children are watching what's like a Punch and Judy show.
It is basically, but Punch even goes, that's the way to do it.
But you know what's weird about this is that obviously in the previous story, we had a very weird scene in which some children were watching this musical thingy, and that was quite creepy. And obviously when Omega, played by Peter Davison on that occasion, grins rather creepily at the child.
Yeah.
But this was a bit creepy as well. All these little close-up of these children, I'm looking at them thinking, I wonder if any of them are famous now.
You got to wonder how Punch and Judy made it to this planet. I mean, because they even call each other, or at least he calls her Judy, you know, so...
Yeah.
Yes, it's like, whoa, this is a little bit of transplant of cultures here.
I think there was a plan to incorporate the Mara into
the dragon with Mara.
Yes, that's exactly, yes. So Lon and his little, that chap, I can't remember his name, turn up and aren't impressed by the puppet show. The Mara's there, I think you mean. And the kids are enjoying the puppet show. They look like they're really enjoying it. So great choice of extras, stroke, stage school kids.
Did you like Punch and Judy?
Did I like Punch and Judy? Yeah. Might have liked it on the first couple of times I saw it.
I've never liked Punch and Judy. I never understood why children would love to see
it. I got bored of it after the third viewing because it seemed to be the same story over and over again.
It is the same story over and over
And it's a good way to pad a scene.
Yeah, and I wanted to have the little thing that the puppeteer had in its mouth to make the funny noises as well. But, it was all right. It was what it was. So Nyssa ends up in the cell with the doctor. That's happened. I missed that bit. Nobody knows. Good.
What did you say?
I said Nyssa ends up in the cell with the doctor.
She doesn't start out with him, in there with him.
No.
No.
So how she get
locked in at a later date?
It's because they catch her.
Trying to get the key.
Yeah. Then they put her in there.
Ah, okay. What so key? Meanwhile,
the
Lon
key of the cell.
Leads the chap. Well, I'm going to call the chap from the museum. It's obviously wrong, but he leads him down blindfolded in through this sort of special cave door to the inner sanctum of the cave where all the little artifacts are, and a slightly spaced out Elizabeth Slater's husband. And the lighting in these scenes is great, just one sort of very fierce light from to one side.
Pastor?
Oh, God.
you know the set that's got the big carved snake that they put the gem in the mouth?
Yeah.
This is the same set, but they've covered the carved snake with curtains.
Okay.
Marvelous.
And they just lit it differently. It's exactly the same set.
Yay. Is anybody still
well,
watching?
Some people like this sort of stuff.
Do they?
That's my job.
Yeah, I know.
So you say. Right, so there's a big ceremony. They're planning a big ceremony in which, I don't know, this is like, I think Namara is going to sort of take over everything. I think that's what they got planned. So the doctor must get out of the cell somehow, like I say, he ain't got sonic screwdriver. And then we have a scene in which the slightly better rendered snake leaves the Mara stroke Tegan's arm. And they've started to go a bit, they've had a bit too much fake tan at this point. You notice that Lon and Tegan, they go a bit orange towards the end of this episode.
Yeah, that's to show that they're possessed by the Mara.
We already knew they were possessed. They didn't need to go orange. Moving forward. So, like I say, there's a point in which... itchy chin. the funny scene
don't
in which...
Don't touch your face.
I just scratched my chin. I know it's on my face, but I have hand sanitized, you know. I have got fairly clean fingers. Moving on. So they could actually use the real snake with an actor's hand on that scene. But they didn't look too bad. Elizabeth Sladen's husband is looking a bit scared. He's got a bit sweaty and clammy when he sees the snake on Tegan's arm. Who lets out? Oh, yeah, the bloke from Bread allows the doctor and Nyssa out of the cell. And then they get challenged in the corridor with some men with swords. And, of course, then Lon comes up and says, "Kill them!" I wish that seems to happen in Doctor Who, doesn't it? Get to a point just before the end of the episode where somebody goes, "Kill them!"
Yes.
The weird thing is...
Nyssa screams.
Yeah!
Is this the end of the episode?
Yes.
The thing is that nowhere before has Lon said anything about killing them. And he just says it there for the cliffhanger and then gives up the idea...
After mum comes on and says, "Shut up, you stupid boy." But, yeah.
His mother talks him out of it.
Yeah. But, yeah, he is possessed by the Mara, though, Kirby. So, and then after that scene, we see another scene of the It's Man. And then we see the rather large sort of, you suppose you'd call it a puppet snake, that they're almost like they're making some sort of carnival together. And they've made this really pink and yellow, long, large snake, which is not actually the Mara, it's just a representation of it. Okay, I'll be quiet.
It reminded me of like a dragon dance from Chinese New Year.
I suppose it did, but without the dragon.
Yeah, with the snake instead of a dragon.
So, Lon has now got a blue shiny crystal in his hand that looks a little bit like the Metaedalus crystal. And we've got Cora Dickerson, who says, I don't like when Nyssa screams. No, I don't like when Nyssa screams, actually. She doesn't do a very good job of it, does she? She's not like... Who was a good screamer? Oh, Bonnie Langford, but we haven't got there yet. she doesn't seem to like a screamer. No, she doesn't. She doesn't seem like a screamer. That's what she actually says. I do apologise.
Yeah, I'm not a screamer. I'm more a person.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, this is the calm, logical one. So her screaming, yeah, is way out of character.
Yeah.
I think, was she bad written in this one then? Because you've commented on this a couple of times that Nyssa wasn't like herself in this one.
No, she's not so much like herself. Bearing in mind the last story of the feature Marlow, she was sort of written out of it, really, wasn't she? She wasn't very well, so they
wrote
the character.
She slept through the whole thing.
Yeah, so they brought her into this one because they haven't got any choice.
Background in this one.
She was a bit preoccupied by other things because obviously she's basically worried about Tegan. So she does a lot of whining to the doctor. The doctor's slightly touchy anyway, so he's not appreciating being whined at. He's quite worried as well about the whole situation. He's so good again, Davison, in this story.
He's very mean to them, though, in this
story.
I
know, but this is what happens when the doctor gets serious. He can get a bit mean when they're in a dire situation. Have you not seen him in Caves of Androzani? That's pretty dire. He was extremely mean in that. Slightly sarcastic, but extremely mean. Oh, we haven't got to that one yet, have we?
It's been a while since I've seen that one. I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
So preparations are being...
mean, too.
Yeah. Preparations are being put together for the big event that the Mara has been planning. The Doctor, meanwhile, sits and does another bit of meditation to make this little crystal glow. And then poor Martin Clunes is forced to wear the most absurd costume probably ever seen in a science fiction fantasy TV
show. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Don't worry.
It looks like a weatherman has put it together.
I have to laugh. His, you know, the mother in this says, and it fits you perfectly. I'm thinking, well, of course, it's a loose, short tunic. It'll fit everybody.
Yes, with an extremely silly hat. Right. And the poor bloke has never lived this down for whatever program he appears on.
Yeah, apparently anytime he's interviewed, they bring up his pictures.
Yes. And he walks in very proudly and carrying this little chest. And it does look rather like the actors have been laughing quite a lot behind the scenes. The Doctor makes his little crystal glow quite a lot. And then the X-Man turns up. And they have a sort of... they didn't actually speak very much, did they? They just sort of looked at each other and they did a little ceremony with a little rubber snake bites X-Man on the... What?
Master.
What?
The biting snake is rubber.
Is it?
Snakes are real.
Yeah, because they would have a real biting snake.
You can see it's
there,
a real snake, yes, but I'm saying... Yeah,
this flying blind through a story, just hearing from you guys is brilliant.
Yeah, so anyway, Peter Davison didn't like holding the garter snakes that he was handed.
Okay, well, he did it anyway. But there's a point in which he's wincing a little bit, and when he looks at Its Man, the eyes go a bit wibbly-wobbly of Its Man, and it's all out of focus, and he's gone a bit funny. Why did he have to be bitten by this snake, Kirby?
To be able to go into trance so that he would not be affected by the Mara.
Ah, okay. Cora Dickerson says, yes, her character. And then she says, he plays Mean Doctor very well, but the Fifth Doctor is written so nice sometimes. Very true. Moving on. So he's now prepped for the big ceremony. And so there's a chap who's doing a big announcement through this sort of like a megaphone thing. He's been in lots of BBC dramas. I think he played a policeman in Heartbeat, I think, as well. Anyway, so there's a big announcement, and they're going to have a big ceremony. The ceremony, I'm skipping forward a bit now to try to stop Kirby from interrupting.
He is not listed in being in something called Heartbeat. He is going to be in he's been in Revenge of the Cybermen and Invisible Enemy, and now he's in this one. His name is Brian Grellis.
I've seen him around anyway. Right, and so the Doctor and Nyssa join the crew, the crowd, while Tegan and Lon place this blue crystal in the sort of wall mural, and all these lights sort of, they're really cool actually, sort of come away from it, and they've gone very orange in the crowd. There's a very horrible noise that comes out when the crystal is placed in there, and the Doctor comes in and tells them not to look at it, basically, and mustn't look away, blah blah blah, and then for some reason the Mara is trying to materialize basically through Tegan, but something goes wrong. What goes wrong, Kirby? As far as Amara is concerned,
well, the Doctor is able to pull the crystal out of the mouth of the thing.
Ah, and that therefore, allegedly, apart from if you're a big Finnish fan, destroys the Mara, because and the funny scene was.
So in the big Finnish is Tegan in that one as well?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm asking.
Big Finish always bring back things.
No, I am ignorant as to whether there's a story.
I'm sure there must be.
There is one.
Yeah, but I thought there would be. I thought there would be. So yeah, the funny scene was when the sort of semi-materialized Mara falls dead on the floor. Some orange and green puke comes out of its mouth and splurges everywhere.
Lovely.
And then
Master, they had to cut. The ending they were running over, they had to make a real fast ending.
I know I did read
and
the
on
info
the DVD,
text.
You can see the whole thing that they filmed, and it makes much more sense.
Yes, I did read the info text, thank you.
If you can watch the whole thing too, like I said.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
Okay, there is a big Finnish one called The Cradle of the Snake.
Yeah,
I think it's about the Mara, and it does. It has Tegan and Nyssa. It has Davidson,
Tegan in it.
And it also has what's his name, Mark.
Hamill?
I can't think of it.
Mark Hamill? Oh, he was Luke Skywalker.
He plays Churlo.
Mark Strickson. Yeah. Anyway, Strickson. So after the puking snake bit scene, we see a very sort of arrogant and smarmy looking It's Man just walk up away from the camera, look back at the camera in a sort of I'm really clever sort of way, and then it disappear.
Who is the It's Man, I presume, is coming back at all, or is he just some weird mystic?
Weird mystic. And then after everything
settles.
He used
to be the museum guy 10 years before, but he learned all about the Mara and decided to go all mystic.
And be a hobbit.
Fair enough.
Not a hobbit, a hermit.
That's what
a hermit.
About the Mara does to you then, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, so Lon wakes
Master,
up real. Oh, for Christ's sake. What?
There is a very unusual scene for Doctor Who in this era.
Yes.
The Doctor puts his arm around
the
companion.
Yes, he comforts Tegan. Oh, well, it gives it a bit more gravitas then, doesn't he? I haven't got to that bit yet, because I'm just saying about blimmin' Lon getting up, and he realises he's wearing a very stupid costume. And then, as I say, the Doctor takes a Metabilis crystal and comforts the very upset Tegan, who, please tell me that Mara's really dead now. Yes, of course it's dead until
yes,
the big fish episode.
Until the next time
and
we
then,
need it for a
like Kirby said, there's a very abrupt ending, because actually this episode story, sorry, could have actually been quite comfortably without any problems a five-parter. They did try and cram a lot in, but I think it would have actually helped the story, even though it was good as it was, to be a five-parter, because it was very, very well written, it was very well acted. Right, so I'm going to say what I think about about Snake Dice. Much better than Kinder. Kinder's okay, I'd say, but this is a really good sort of spooky, scary, brilliantly acted. Bear in mind, it's all studio bound. I think it's an amazing job with the scenery, and it had lots of extras and made it feel like a good, sort of fairly good big production. I just have to bow to Janet Fielding, Martin Clune, and Peter Davison for putting in some proper work for this story, the writers as well. Brilliant, really, really good story. I've always liked Snake Dance. It's one of those stories that when it went out, and I was a Doctor Who fan when it went out, I couldn't watch it when it aired. So I'd had that gap, and I'd missed it. I know I'd missed a fairly good story, and I didn't get to see it for a couple of years, because obviously with repeats weren't that sort of prevalent in those days, and I didn't have a video recorder. I managed to get a copy of it through, slightly dodgy means, shall we say. So I was able to see it eventually. But it is very good, and it's sort of, it's not much more I can say about it, really. It's well worth watching, and it sort of would have been, at the time I was becoming a big fan of the Fifth Doctor, would have been another thing that would have cemented that fanhood of him. Great, great stuff. So, Kirby, first time you've ever seen it?
First time I've ever seen it. I've now seen it 4 times.
And we've already had your review of it, that was off air, wasn't it? So what did you think of it then, Kirby?
Absolutely fantastic. I didn't know how I was going to like it, and I started watching it earlier in the week while I was trying to work, and ended up and I found it too distracting. I'm going, what's with this weird guy on the sofa? Then I finally sat down and started watching it a few days later, and really, really good. I liked it better than Kanda, although I loved Kanda as well. Martin, what's his name, is Clunes. Really good.
Yes.
Yes. I've never seen him in these other things he's in, so.
Well, that's very, he's very much a British television actor, so he obviously doesn't do a lot of films and stuff, but he's very good.
Yeah, Adam, do you remember the name of the film he was in where he basically had to get back to his wedding? It was a British-made film. It was really funny. He got taken and abandoned naked on a Scottish island and had to make his way back.
Haven't seen
Four
that
Four Weddings and a Funeral?
No,
he's very good. Obviously, he's done that very long-running series. Is it called Doc Martin or Dr. Martin? Debbie, I can't remember. I've never seen it. But I know it must be good because Sigourney Weaver is a regular extra in it, isn't she? Well, not extra, sorry, regular actor appears in it.
A lot of well-known people guest star in that now.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in Shakespeare in Love.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was in one of my most favorite ones, that William and Mary. I loved that series.
Of course, he better fame when he was in Men Behave Badly. That's how that sort of, he started his career built up from that. That was a great comedy series.
Boy, he's been in lots of stuff.
Of course he has.
He's everywhere.
There's a new comedy series he's been in which he plays a driving instructor who's very, very tight. Very, very good. Right,
would
so
that be this show called Warren?
What?
No. current thing he's in is called Warren.
Warren, that's right. Yes. Cora Dickerson says in Big Finish Audios, I think the Mara went TV into the Doctor after this story. And then she said like it was hiding in Tegan after Kinder. Then Mary said something. Saying that their story was Cradle of the Snake, and Cora then says, yes, if I remember that plot correctly. So don't give it away, girls. One day we'll actually be paying attention to Big Finish stuff. You never know. If we survive this pandemic, of course.
Oh, I intend to.
How long have you had it for?
I'm not defeated by something named after a light beer, thank you very much.
Excuse me, how long have you had it?
How long have I had it? About a week.
Well, it should be nearly over now, isn't it?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm feeling loads better.
Okay, good.
I'll tell you what, it was, obviously symptoms are very different from person to person. It's very odd, but for me, it was like a really bad head cold that just segued down into my throat and chest. And it was, there was a couple of days where I found it quite hard to breathe, not like, oh my God, gasping, hospitalised, but it was a problem, you know, trying to get upstairs and things.
Yeah, that's what I heard from that bloke who
posted
from Liverpool.
One were like, well, it sounds like you've got it, but, you know, unless you really are dying, then, just stay at home. I was like, okay.
By the way, now that I've seen this story, we're down to only 6 stories I have not seen.
Okay. But back to Debbie's health, which I think is slightly more important. Obviously, Debbie is one, because they're talking about confirmed cases on the Isle of Wight, and the as people seem to get confused that the confirmed ones are the ones that count, not the ones that haven't been confirmed, like yourself and like my work colleague.
Another one of my work colleagues. We're just the by-the-bys. The people that are confirmed are the ones that it's not confirmed, so it doesn't count.
It does count. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It does count. I think you'll find more people
have
had it.
Hundreds of people on the Isle of Wight have had it, yes. But fortunately,
well,
they've had
that. They say that there's two different strains of it. Mm. One is really serious, and then there's a lesser strain that people maybe like with Deb and her symptoms.
I think it's all down to immune systems and stuff like that, isn't it? I think that's
I'm in that at-risk category that could mean that I'm not going to see out in the front door for the next couple of months.
Well, you think you might catch it again?
No, I'm just in the at-risk stay-at-home-for-3 months type thing. Yeah.
How are you getting your groceries?
Tom
comes down in this Darth Vader uniform, almost literally. Poor bloke. It's a proper breathing apparatus, isn't it? Almost.
It's a proper filter system mask.
It's amazing.
And when he first started going out in it, a lot of people were like, oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
He's now the norm.
He tried to have a conversation with me. I cannot tell. So how is she then? And he went, okay, then I'll give him my love.
Sorry.
I am your father.
Oh, poor bloke, having to wear that, but good on him. Right then, so we better move on, and we'll return to the subject of Debbie's health later in the episode. Mary, what did you think?
Well, this is actually my third watching of Snake Dance over time. Uh-oh. Unlike Kirby, I don't watch it, back to back to back, over just a few days. I first watched it because the name interested me. And then I watched it again because it's like one of my favorite episodes. What's this? And now this time I watched it for the show. And unfortunately, for me, this viewing was not very favorable. I was really bored through it. And maybe it's because I had seen it twice before.
Well, let's hope that's the reason, Mary. That's hopeful.
Yeah, I'd like to think that. But I was so aware of, padding scenes like the Punch and Judy show and stuff. And so many things were very distracting. Like I mentioned, that hideous dress that the mother wears the second half of the story, that pink and flowered thing. Oh, my gosh. I don't know where they came up with that. And then, of course, the comment that the Sun King outfit fits him perfectly when it's like, come on, it's a tunic. And I read that this was supposed to be the cheap episode, with more money being spent on the previous one, Ark of Infinity, and the one to follow. Mm. So they didn't have much of a budget for this one, which is why, going back to Kirby's comments, that so many of these sets are actually either, returning sets from the previous story, Kinda, or were just borrowed from other things in the BBC. And the same thing with the costumes, which is why we have this weird mishmash of costumes in this story. It's like whatever they could dust off in the costume department, they threw on people. And that's what you're going to wear for this. Just distracted by a lot of things that don't make sense. And Nissa's whininess being so out of character and all that. So many things were so bothersome to me during this that I have to say I did not enjoy this particular viewing.
Okay. Blimey. No, don't you give her one of those.
I did forget to mention when you said about costumes. No, like I said, as we've been doing this right from the beginning of the Tom Baker era, probably a bit longer actually, the little squares that apparently occasionally appear in Doctor Who over time and they get used in different parts of it. Remember, Kirby, the little square thingies?
Yes, of course.
They were a set of buttons previous appearance.
Broken up more and more.
There were a set of buttons in the previous appearance. Yeah. This episode, they're on the front of the leather. The guards had these sort of leather things, and they were great big square sort of front bits that had different colours on them. They appeared there. Did you notice that?
No, I did not.
Well, have a look at Lon's guards. I think they almost got like leather things that go across their chest. In the middle of the chest, square things.
I will look.
Yeah. Oh, something, God, something else that I did come across is that they had to do a lot of editing in this over the course of the story because there were so many double entendres, things that, that got this everybody laughing, usually snake references, that they had to edit a lot of it out because they were afraid that it would have the same effect on the audience. It was
rather like my point of Martin Clunes lying on his back playing with his snake as I was trying to get a laugh and failed quite dismally. Cora Dickinson says the Buddhist themes were that were in both stories. Is there a story this season that took most of the budget? Probably Mordred Undead, which our next story, in fact.
Just from memory, I would say, Mordred Undead.
Well, lots of stuff going on in Mordred Undead.
I remember watching the next one, and the sets that they've come up with, especially like the museum-y bit, was just brilliant. So,
I love the way when we just discussed the trouser snakes, snakes, that you said the word sets very deliberately to not make it sound like another word that could have been associated with snakes.
And even makeup and costumes in Mordred Undead probably took a lot of money.
Quite possibly. We'll soon find out. And there's a lot of special effects and stuff going on, gruesome stuff, which we'll find out next time. And so, Debbie, what did you – are you going to watch it?
I'm going to watch it.
I don't know how, but I would advise watching it. Would advise watching it somehow.
Judging by the pictures and from what I've heard, it just definitely sounds like I need to give it a good watch.
Well, as you're supposed to be doing The Journey, which incorporates watching every Doctor Who story in existence, you're rather going against the grain by not.
I've been watching this. It's apparently been dispatched and it's on its way, so I will be watching this.
Good girl.
Ida wants to watch it as well. Yeah, so.
Good girls. So we can move on to... So basically we quite liked it. Sorry?
There's one from... there's a second Doctor story that I still have not seen.
Oh, which one's that?
Wheel in Space.
Wheel in Space. Which Will would that be? Will Shakespeare or...
I don't remember why. I think I was sick or something and somehow I... Or I was out of town and,
no
and I didn't have a chance to watch it.
Cora
no
says,
excuse.
Okay, yes, I love
I do have that
Undead.
As part of my six,
I will
seen.
Have to remember to tune in. Yes, you will indeed. Sorry, I was talking over you there, Kirby. Aren't I rude? Okay. All right, so we can move on to feedback now. Let's see what we've got. Ooh. Right. Kerry Miles says, hello, 20 megabyte podcast crew, while Kirby looks up the stuff that hasn't appeared on the Facebook feed, or his Facebook request, indeed. Having watched Doctor Who from The Unearthly Child, I saw this story on first transmission and was not expecting too much, as this was written as a continuation of the Kinder story from a few months before. As Kirby is watching it for the first time, I asked my wife Linda to watch it with me and give me her thoughts, as she had never seen it before. She enjoyed seeing the actors and saying what they were doing now. Linda said the story was easy to follow and the snake was not as bad as the one in Kinder. She still keeps going on about Martin Clunes in a short dress. Still, everybody has to start somewhere. I believe it was his first role in TV. Wait for it. Oh. Kirby's going to bleat on about it again. Here we go.
No, it wasn't.
Three. Right, all in all, a good story. Usual set problems and the polystyrene walls and the hollow wooden floors that should have been rock. Yeah, surprise Nyssa didn't get her high heels stuck. I now see what Adam...
When she was stuck around on what is supposed to be a dirt path, you could hear the hollow clunking up her shoes.
Like spotted. I now see what Adam sees in Tegan. She looked great until she started talking. The cliffhangers were a bit naff, but even I enjoyed it first time round. Finally figured out where Linda had seen Brian Miller, Dugdale, before. He was in BBC's Casualty. There you go. Thank you, Terry and Linda Miles. So thank you very much, Terry and Linda, fantastic stuff. Send more in, that's what I say. Again, I did sort of allude earlier on while talking about how wonderful Janet Fielding was in this story. And I don't think we get to see her not being Tegan again in Doctor Who, so shame. And I'm really surprised she didn't really play many other characters after Doctor Who, to be fair. She's obviously a very good actress. Right then, so, Kirby, anything coming through?
Of course.
Go on then.
Okay, Neil James said, Snake Dance, not sure we really needed a Mara sequel, but okay. Fantastic guest cast, terrible costumes. What the H is Nyssa wearing? I really like the comedy in the scenes between Ambril, Tanha, and Lon. Love the moment when Nyssa tells the doc she could have managed herself when he helps her climb down. The possession scenes are quite spooky, and Janet Fielding does a good job. Funny seeing Martin Clunes. Is it Clunes?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes,
at the beginning of his fantastic career, Peter Davison is brilliant as always. It doesn't quite hit the heights that Kenda does for me, but I like it. Good, but not great. 3 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, well, on the Nyssa thing, I still think it's because she just doesn't know how to dress outside of her, her velvets. So I think she just picked a random bunch of clothes.
Next is William Robbins says, I love Snake Dance. Both of the Mara stories are great, but I actually lean towards this one as my favorite. Martin Clunes is great, and the rest of the supporting cast work so well with each other. 5 stars out of 5. Then she says, are you running late? And I tell her we are on now. And Jeff Waddle says, I love Kenda. I kinda don't love Snake Dance.
Kinda
don't love Snake Dance.
Yeah, I like Kenda better than Snake Dance.
That's it for my request.
Oh, okay.
Unless you've got something else.
We have got something else, haven't we, Debbie?
Have we? Oh, blah. Okay, we do.
You are paying for your sins.
Of course I am. I knew I would be. Doc Martin, the early years, or Tegan goes deeper and further into the empire of the snake. Dear 20 megabyters, Snake Dance is, of course, a closely studied illustration of historical and sociological trends as cyclical in nature and exploitative in character, just like Kinder was. Good. We're back on track, Alan. Thank you. Here we discover how such a cycle may be initiated inadvertently by a self-deluded advanced society acting together. We pick up the cycle as the Mara is re-emerging, and we see signs of the breakdown in this society in the antediluvian statuses of the characters and in the distorted mirrors, self-delusional constructs rather than the all-saving self-knowledge from the mirrors in Kinder. The Doctor ends with the absolute reassurance that the Mara is destroyed through the focusing of minds in the crystal. Is that what happens? We remember that the Doctor lies. It should be noted that while Snake Dance doesn't seem to have as good a reputation as Kinder does, it is a lot more interesting and varied with quite a bit more going on. Okay, Martin Clunes looks ridiculous, but that's no major fault. He does so with some alacrity, in fact. Also, having a fake snake representing a fake snake and a real snake representing a real snake part of the time makes it more realistic that the fake snake only representing a real snake as happening Kinder. Okay, I'm confused. We also learn that Doc Martin was a petulant young fellow in his youth before moving to Earth in the early 21st century and working as a homophobic doctor with a dodgy bedside manner, perhaps not surprising. All in all, Snake Dance is an interesting sequel and prequel of the big finished story, The Cradle of the Snake. The supporting cast certainly throw themselves into what is a pretty odd and distinctive set of roles, with echoes of the lively characters more common from some years before. The Doctor here also seems to rise to a level of energy not seen before in the Fifth Doctor era. His mind is racing rather than stuck in cricketing mode. Tegan is, of course, on overdrive as she has been in Kinder, as Janet Fielding gets the chance once more to act rather than just moan. The sets are unfortunately not much more convincing as rooms and caves than the Kinder sets were convincing as jungles. I think we commented on that. The sets in the audio adventure, The Cradle of the Snake, were much more impressive. This story is perhaps 4 episodes too short, since if the Kinder had been more like this, at least it would have been less dull and a little less pretentious. Well, maybe not. Next up, Doctor Who and the Two Brigadiers, or he wasn't the Doctor all along, unless you count Big Finish. Full Fathom 5. These are my thoughts, Alan P. Butcher.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alan.
Yeah.
What's he referring to there at the end?
A Full Fathom 5, that's another Big Finish. It's from a set of stories that are called the Unbound stories, meaning other actors play the Doctor it's kind of a flight of fantasy, like what if, you know, this happened to the doctor, or what if the doctor got sick, you know, there's a story of him not really being the doctor, but being one who writes stories about a fictional character called the doctor. It's a weird set of stories, but Full Fathom 5 is very good.
Cool. Okay, I'll have to look at
marvelous.
That. Just thank you, Alan.
Just preparing myself for said quiz.
No.
I beg your pardon?
No.
Let's see if anything's come through on the thread.
I think Kirby doesn't want the quiz, Adam.
Tough.
I want a regular quiz, not this
tough.
Business.
Right then, Cora Dickerson says, I think Will in space would be lost in space. And then Neil James said, Morden Undead next week. The Brig is back. I recommend watching with the updated CGI effects. They complement the truly stunning sets. I might just do that for a change, you know.
Okay, well, I don't know. I've the updated one.
Right, so...
I tend to watch them as in their original form, but... Oh, well.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, I'm trying to get me scores page to open up before we initiate the quiz, which was not on last week due to the fact I got told off for being too loud and stuff. And we have to explain to Debbie the new rules. Or were you on last time?
I wasn't on last week, but yep. I was on for the start right. of the new rules. Which
we'll come up with I've come up with a new idea for the Joker. You can either double
okay.
the yep, points
okay. well,
or... You can take points off another player with your Joker if you get the question right. Okay?
Oh, that's interesting.
Mean. That's not. It's the game.
You right, can help yourself or hurt somebody else.
So, it's okay, time for enough. The new latest edition of the new. You won't get this one. Oh, shit. Oh, there it is. Roll the dice and we get a category. Of course, the order of questions are Mary, Debbie, Kirby, and one Joker for each. Of course, we still have the good old bonus pot. So again, that could be a bit of a game changer. First player to 6 points wins. I was thinking of bringing in a phone a friend, or well, not exactly a phone a friend, ask a friend, as in anybody who's watching the video feed, maybe they could come up with an answer that could help one of our players out. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, but that didn't work so well when we were doing the Trivial Pursuit live on the other night, because nobody's asking questions.
Oh, yeah, it was going quite slowly, yeah. That
was you won't give us points
other than the people that comment. How do we know who's watching?
Yeah.
That doesn't matter, does it? We have people watching. In fact, more than normal. Okay, we won't do that. But it might be worth experimenting with it, though, Debbie.
On Facebook.
It's because everybody's stuck at home.
Well, yeah, there's a bit of that. Okay, so like I say, no points in bonus. I didn't deduct any points from anybody this week. Turby really did deserve a several points deduction, but I forgot. Right then, so Mary, your question is going to be a yellow one. Oh, what's this? Oh, I've got this. It's the question categories card. Won't need that. Yellow question. Let's have it the right way around. It says here, Mary, this is for you. Compose the story title, The Celestial...
I know.
Shut up, Kirby.
We don't do that anymore.
I'll play my Joker, the Celestial Toymaker.
Yay!
And you will be doing it. Now, what would you like to do with your Joker? You can't take any points off anyone, really, because nobody's got anything.
Points.
Well, you could send someone to minus. Well done, Mary. Yes, you've used your Joker. Right then. So, Debbie, this is yours. It's going to be... Oh, that, sorry, the dice hit the bell. You didn't get that one right.
Yeah,
right, you've got a pink question. The pink question is this. I'll use it on the same card, actually. I've lost my place. There we are. What was the name of the first Doctor's granddaughter? Ouch.
Joker Susan, sorry.
That's how Kirby would have answered it. Joker Susan. All right, then. Okay,
can
Kirby.
I keep points, please?
No. Well, you can take them off Mary, if you like.
I don't want to take them off Mary. that's horrible.
Kirby. I'll bet Kirby would do it.
Game.
Kirby.
Master.
And what What was the name of the street in London that housed the scrapyard that the first Doctor lived in?
Joker, Totter's Lane.
Oh, you didn't play Joker.
Yeah, you're right.
Say
it like that.
No, he did say Joker, Totter's Lane. So that's the end of the Jokers. That was really
a bit of a show.
Nothing in the bonus pot. Nothing in the bonus pot. I'll have to move my bell because it's. I keep on rolling Adam. The dice into it.
Adam?
What?
You didn't ask Kirby if he wanted to keep his points.
No, you just. Oh, sorry, Kirby. Do you want to keep your points?
Yes, please.
There we go. That was a good summary. So Joker's gone. Got a bit lucky then, you lot, didn't you? Right, an orange question for Mary. Name the character... Sorry, I'll start that again. Right, I forget I said that. Name the director of the critically acclaimed episodes Heaven Sent and Hellbent. Oh, dear.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, nor do I. Anybody?
No.
No.
Well, the answer is Rachel Talalay.
Oh, I should have known that one.
Oh, yeah, you do know that one now. Isn't that funny? After I read the answer out, you know the question. All right, then.
Well,
so,
as soon as you say Talalay, everybody's like, yeah.
Right. She did a lot.
It's not a name you retain.
Debbie, you've got a blue one. That's what she said.
That's what she said, yeah.
What type of institution is... Hang on, we've had that question. Sorry. That was one of them last week. I'll put that card away.
What do the category colors mean? Like when
I've got the game card here. Right, then these are the category colors. Right, blue is Time Lords. Pink is Companions. Yellow is Episodes and Stories. Purple is Years and Dates. Green is Monsters. And orange is Cast, Crew and Beyond. All right.
Okay.
I might incorporate that knowledge into future episodes if I can actually keep the card and not lose it. Right, then, where did I get up to? Oh, it was Debbie's go, wasn't it? Oh, for Christ's sake. Where did we get up to? Did I roll the dice for you, Debbie?
I don't know.
I can't remember myself. Yeah, we're going to do a blue question.
Roll. You started reading one and then said it was from last week's, and I was about to point out...
Yeah, I should have stuck with last week's one, even though it had already been on. Yeah. It was actually slightly more difficult than the one I'm just about to ask you. Don't get annoyed, Kirby. But I have to read what's on the card. I'll show the viewers. No. Oh, no, I won't, because it's not... Oh, yeah, it is. I'll show the viewers.
Please don't show
the blue viewers. One. The blue one, viewers. Can you see it? It says, when a witch doctor's outfit featured a long scarf.
Really? Okay, yeah. Tom Baker.
Now, if it does say Tom Baker on the back of the card, you've got the point. Oh, dear. The fourth, it says. So what do you reckon I should do there, Kirby?
I give it to her.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah, Tom Baker is sort of correct, even though it says the fourth on the card. Right, then, let's see if anybody's still watching. Oh, they are. Right, then, has anybody comes up with anything? Well, we've got... Cora says, I didn't like the updated CGI snake for Kinder, but CGI for Morn Undead was good. And then Lillian Robin said, Rachel Talalay directed one of my favourite movies, Tank Girl.
I love Tank Girl.
Yes, back to the quiz. So, whose go is it? Kirby's, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kirby, you've got an orange one. That's what she said.
I do. Yeah.
And the orange question is, who played the warrior king Yukarnas in White Mind Warp?
Oh, Brian Blessed.
Yay!
Yeah, made you think though, didn't it? Right, there's a point in the bonus pot. Works in the usual way. And it says orange again, so I'll have to change to a different card.
So we go, I know, is what how it
yeah,
works.
Yeah, well done. Well done. It's long established how you answer a question that's in the bonus pot.
Well, back when Robert used to just blurt him out.
He did, yes. Right, but he's not here, so... You know the rules. Here we go. This is the question for 1 point. What was the name of the actress who played Barbara Wright in season 1? There are multiple choices, but because it's who she is, you should know this without the multiple choice. Who played Barbara Wright? Anybody?
I know.
Oh, all right, Kirby. Steady on. Go on, then.
Jacqueline Hill.
Jacqueline Hill, was it? Yeah, you're right.
Of course I am.
Right, so bonus
What's going on with points?
Beg your pardon?
What's going on with points?
The points are, at the moment, in last place with 2 points, Mary. In second place with 3 points, Kirby. And in the lead with 4 points. Hang on, sorry, Debbie. And in the lead with 4 points is Kirby. And yes, I did scratch my eyebrow.
Kirby was in the lead.
If the viewers are worried, I did scratch my eyebrow with my fairly clean hand. It's fairly clean. Right then. So, back to Mary. Let's see what Mary's going to get. Alexa, front room fire off. It's bloody boiling in here.
Okay.
Thank you. Right then. Oh, you got a purple one.
Adam, did you see the picture post-Tom uploaded yesterday of Isla discovering that Alexa can fart?
Oh, my goodness.
No, yeah, I haven't seen that.
Wonderful.
I haven't seen that, but my one can do that as well.
Yes, it's been trying to keep her away from Alexa since then.
Right, Mary. Hang on. Is it Mary's question?
Yes.
Okay, this is your question, Mary. It's a purple one. I'll remind you what purple is. Years and dates.
Oh, great. Oh, God.
But it will be multiple choice, so here we are. In which year is the episode Father's Day set? The multiple choice answers are 1987, 1985, 1989, or 1983.
I'll hazard a guess of 1989.
That's a bit of a shame. Oh, my ear didn't play properly, but no, it wasn't 1989. So a point goes into the bonus pot. If anybody wants to answer that for fun, because there's no points available.
1987.
Yes, Debbie, that would have been right. But it's not. Well, it is. You don't get any points for it. Okay, so it's a point in the bonus pot. Debbie, your question. It's going to be a... Oh, blast, I dropped it. Where's it gone?
On the floor, by the sound of it.
It is purple. So, in which year did long-term producer of Doctor Who, John Nathan Turner, assume the role? So, when did he become producer of Doctor Who? What year was it? No multiple choice? I've just dropped the card. Where'd that go? Ah, there it is. I think that's right.
He's an 80s guy, so...
I know.
Tough.
1980.
He choked then. Oh, there it is.
Yes.
Correct. It is indeed 1980.
He did all the 1980. I think he did it to like 1989.
He did it until the show died.
Yeah.
He did. The classic series died. And don't be alarmed, listeners. Something went down the wrong way. I haven't got a dry cough. That's what caused me to cough. Okay, what we've got here? Nothing coming through on the feed, so we move on to Kirby. You have that was a good dice rolling effect, wasn't it? That was a real one too.
Nice
orange.
Good. Orange? What category is orange?
Category orange is cast, crew, and beyond. So, Kirby, this is your cast, crew, and beyond question. Jackie Tyler was played by Camille Cordori, who starred alongside Eric Idle and Robbie Coltrane in which film comedy about two small-time gangsters forced to hide in a convent?
I have no idea.
Well, Debbie knows, but she can't actually get any points from it. What is it, Debbie?
Nuns on the Run.
It was indeed Nuns on the Run, so another point goes into the bonus pot.
A little bit underrated, that movie.
It is quite good, actually. She's very squeaky-voiced in it as well. She plays somebody who's rather unintelligent.
She was a great guest at a Hoolanta a few years ago.
Right, so 2 points in the bonus pot.
I've met her as well, yeah.
For the blue question.
And okay. What category is blue?
Blue. The category blue is Time Lords. So, what is the name of the broken camouflage unit that is meant to disguise the Doctor's TARDIS wherever it lands?
Whose question is that?
It's a bonus pot question. As you answered first, you can answer it. What's it called, Mary?
Then I know.
Go on, Em.
The chameleon circuit.
2 points to Mary, and the scores are 4 each.
Wow, I've never been in contention with this.
Right,
that
so...
That would be questions.
Back to Mary. You've got
these
a green one.
These pursuit questions are definitely levelers, aren't they?
Green one, monsters. Monsters, Mary.
You said green is monsters?
Apparently so.
Yep.
Which Doctor Who podcast co-presenter is a pain in the ass when trying to do reviews of Doctor Who stories. That's not the question, really. I made that one up. Right then.
This I was going to say Trevor Gench. I know that one.
Oh, my glasses, new varifocals. What was the real name of the planet of the spiders that the Third Doctor made a fatal visit to?
Is it Metabilis 2?
Ooh. Ooh. I'm going to give that to you anyway. It's Metabilis 3. No, Kirby says no.
Because it's the wrong number.
I'll go on then. I'll give you nothing for that one. So a point goes into the bonus box because Kirby's got a good guide as to whether people should have points or not. So we'll say that it's no. It's Metabilis 3. Good guess, though. So close. But yet so far.
It is so focused that that is the name of the planet. That's the 3. That it has to be 3.
It's the third planet from the star Metabilis. So hence Metabilis 3. Sorry, Mary. It's Kirby's fault. Very harsh.
I don't get into it to that detail like he does.
No, true. Very unlucky there, though, Mary. Very unlucky. Right then, Debbie.
Yes.
And roll the dice.
That Mary's good. Question. Oh no, she's already had it. Yes,
that was Mary's question. Right, yellow. Do you want to know?
That is yellow.
Yellow is. Damn, I just dropped my tablets. Oh no, packet's empty. Is episodes and stories, Debbie.
Okay.
All right. Which Doctor featured in the story Black Orchid?
Well, that's going to be. Oh God, we just watched it the other week. Peter Davison. Sorry, I meant to say the 5th.
Same thing. Yes, it was indeed. Right then, where's my dice gone?
Say 5th Doctor Peter Davison, then you can't be wrong.
Somebody's on the verge of winning. Right then, Kirby, your question is going to be a yellow question, which is episodes and stories again. Okay. In the second Doctor story, The Time Meddler, what historical battle is the meddling monk trying to alter the outcome of?
It's the Battle of Hastings, however you want to.
Well, that's what it is, the Battle of Hastings. It's not however you want to anything. That is the
I mean, okay, fine.
Okay, right then. There is 1 point left in the bonus pot. Now, this could have 3 outcomes. 2 players could win by answering this question right. Another one can keep themselves in the game. So here we go. Roll the dice. Oh, I didn't think
that would, be.
It's a purple question. Purple is years
and dates.
Dates. So, right. In which year did Davros make his first appearance? Very quiet all of a sudden. Doesn't work very well in audio presentations.
Is this a free-for-all? Because I know.
Yes, it's a bonus. You know then. Go on then. 1925. I don't think a Doctor Who was on in 1925, Debbie.
1975.
Oh, 1975 is the correct answer. Which means, of course, the final scores are in last place with 4 points, a very creditable 4, which in fact, in my view, should be 5. Mary, in second place with 5 points, which should be 5.
Okay, make it 5.
It's Kirby. But the winner this week is Sick Note herself. Yes, it's Debbie Melrose. Right, so
I have already updated the episode listing online.
Yeah, and of course we've given everybody the updated thread. Did you actually update it weekly then? I mean, like all the content of the episode and all that stuff, and who presented it and things like
that.
Pardon?
The only thing I don't have is when you release it, because you won't release it for a few more days.
Well, it depends. I've got a bit of time on my hands. M&S have very kindly given us an extra day off by way of thanks for the fact that we're exposing our health to the general public.
That's brilliant. I was going to ask you what they were doing for you guys.
Giving us a day off, a free day off this week. Pardon?
How about a raise?
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think so.
Yeah, no, they're not going to be that dramatic.
Right, so I'm just going to see if there is any Doctor Who news. Obviously, there was a special video by Jodie Whittaker in which she basically tried to galvanise Doctor Who fans into...
That was brilliant. Give them a bit of a lift.
I have a feeling she shot that herself with her own phone.
It looked like it.
Brilliant stuff. So good on her. A bit more of that from Doctor Who. Here it is. I'll play it. I think this plays. It was...
Oh, hi. This is an emergency transmission. If you're seeing this, the TARDIS must have detected an upsurge in psychological signals from somewhere in space and time. Basically, I think somebody somewhere might be a little bit worried. I'm actually just self-isolating, or as I like to call it, hiding from an army of Sontarans. But keep that to yourself. Now, here's what I do in any worrying situation. One, remember, you will get through this, and things will be all right. Even if they look uncertain, even if you're worried, darkness never prevails. Two, tell jokes, even bad ones, especially bad ones. I'm brilliant at bad ones. Three, be kind, even kinder than you were yesterday. And I know you were super kind yesterday. Look out for each other. You won't be the only one worried. Talking will help, sharing will help. Look out for your friends, your neighbours, people you hardly know, and family. Because in the end, we're all family. Four, listen to science and listen to doctors. Right? They've got your back. Five, stay strong. Stay positive. You've got this. And I will see you very soon.
There we are, Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, that's a really nice message, especially, you know, at younger viewers. Yeah.
Indeed. It meant so much to Ilo.
It did.
Yeah, she was like, the doctor knows I'm worried. And I was like, well, she's not really talked to us about being worried about it. But it opened up a dialogue so that we could suddenly start talking more about it. And because she was very worried and she's been a bit down, but she's not really talked about it. But as soon as the doctor had said it's okay, everything's going to be all right, she was like, is it? But yeah, you know.
And that's obviously Boris Johnson, who took one for the team this week, would have felt that message quite strongly as well. But I say, like him or hate him, he's done pretty well, to be fair. It just needs to maybe move things forward a bit quicker. He's a bit sort of slightly, he's like one step behind how I'd like it to progress, but he's still a step ahead of
I just don't understand why suddenly everybody's going out and exercising when they wouldn't have done it.
But I don't understand.
Out of the house, that's all.
I don't understand why they can't just do their exercise in their own houses.
How many steps you're allowed away from your house? That's I think it's just
been a bit unlucky in some ways that the weather's been absolutely amazing over the last couple of weeks, and it's been difficult for people to just stay in and stuff. We been quite busy until now, so I've still got a few bits and jobs to do, not earning any money from them, but. It was nice to actually be able to get a cup of tea and sit in the garden in the sunshine on Saturday. I work Sundays. It's nice to have some, even though it's really cold, but it's nice to have some nice weather. It's just needs to be over. I'm fed up with it. Not the weather, the corona. Right, Candy Bar Books short story competition. Following the success of first two Lethbridge Stewart's short story competitions, Candy Jar is presenting a third competition, again open to previously unpublished writers, both in and outside the UK. So maybe Matthew Cresswell could pretend he's not published and write under.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the sort of thing he would enter, but he's been published.
The Lucy Wilson Mysteries, Serpent's Tongue, written by Jonathan Macho. Macho is a good name, isn't it? I don't know what that's all about. There's some stories come out. Doctor Who Lockdown, Vincent and the Doctor. The third in the global Watchathon events organised by Doctor Who Magazine's Emily Cook, now entitled The Doctor Who Lockdown, will be 11th Doctor's Tale, Vincent and the Doctor, taking place on the titular Vincent van Gogh's birthday on the 30th of March. So that would be, that'd be tomorrow then, wouldn't it? To join in, simply pop in your DVD or Blu-ray disc or access a streaming service such as BBC iPlayer, Amazon Video, iTunes, Google Play on Netflix. Well, the fact is iPlayer on your Fire Stick, it's got an amazing app. Everything's so easily accessible in regards to new Doctor Who. So I just wish they put all the classic stuff on it as well, to be fair.
So that's tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes.
I'm going to be working at that time.
It says today. At 7 p.m.
Otherwise, I'd like to.
7 p.m. Or BST or 2 p.m. EDT. Hang on, I said no, these are wrong, sorry. 7 p.m. and then 2 p.m. EDT.
Yes.
5 a.m. AEDT and 7 a.m. NZDT. That makes sense to anybody.
Yes.
The sequel to Doctor Who Rose, written by Russell T. Davis, has now been released and celebrating 15 years since transmission of the episode. So it's a book, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's gone very quiet.
Written by Russell T. Davis, yeah.
Yes. There was a rewatch of it. This is not BBC One, I don't know what that means. Read the first thoughts of the 13th Doctor. BBC will be releasing a number of items related to Doctor Who over the coming weeks, with today seeing a new short story featuring the 13th Doctor written by showrunner Chris Chibnall. That means there'll probably be a cliff in it somewhere. time, space, visualizer, free worldwide online event. That was on the... Or was... That would have been yesterday. the Doctor Who magazine... we've got 1976, Doctor Who's Hottest Year on the cover. So it's issue 550. You can get that from whoone.co.uk, by the way.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Yeah. Nah.
David Collings has passed away at the age of 79. He had a number of memorable appearances in Doctor Who, appearing 11 episodes of the classic series between 1975 and 1983.
Oh, he's going to be in Modern Undead.
Indeed. I was just about to say, you always ruin it for me.
That's my job.
He played Mordrin in the episode we're going to look at next week. Stephen Moffat, he's back on Twitter, isn't he? Because he's published some stuff as well. That's about it, really. The viewing figures for the final story, Timeless Children, I nearly forgot what it was called, seemed to disappear into the ether. It was a bit low, to be fair, for a finale, but hey, the people had other things on their minds, didn't they, at the time? So, that's it. I will have a look at Lavazzi. I don't know if they're still running, because there's some sort of lockdown, but we'll have a look anyway. A lot of these places have stopped selling things, haven't they, Debbie? Because they're non-essentials.
Even online,
it down. I mean, you can still post. Royal Mail and Post Office and Parcel Force are still operating, it's a very skeleton crew thing going on at the moment.
Yeah, well, we ordered something from Amazon the other week, and it turned up a thing called rubbing alcohol.
I ordered a load of plant pots,
aloe vera gel. Oh, I got some lavender seeds as well, because Deb said she wanted some lavender plants, but she didn't actually want the seeds, she just wanted the plants.
Lavender, mint, basil, rosemary, oregano.
I got some basil, because M&S do the little gardens and have them. Is that what you're talking about?
Basil faulty?
Right, so if you want to order yourself while you're off self-isolating a Fourth Doctor scarf, you can indeed still get it from lavazzi.co.uk, who I'm not going to bother sending an invoice to now because it's far too late. We'll just let it roll on for another year for free. What do you think about that? Aren't I kind to my long-time sponsors in our anniversary year?
Your generosity itself.
Thank you. Don't be sarcastic. Right then. Who won? Let's see what we've got coming up with Who Won. Countermeasures, Mavellan. Oh, you want to like Mavellans, don't you, Kirby? Mavellan Maneuver. It looks like it's some sort of audiobook. Cry of the Voltress, a Sixth Doctor story on Big Finish. Dissected, a Torchwood story. That's the thing I'm most disappointed about, them cancelling Wales Comic Con, so I was going to get to meet John Barrowman. That ain't going to happen now. First
I'm not going to Barcelona now.
Barcelona?
I was supposed to be in Barcelona at the end of April.
Oh, right. Oh, dear. Oh, God.
Is that the planet where the dogs with no noses?
But you missed the trip last year, didn't you?
Yeah, because I had my passport stolen, so yeah.
Yeah. Not having much luck that way, are you?
I got to Malta, didn't I? So, yeah, not too bad.
Subterfuged as a CD released by the BBC and Big Finish. It's a seventh Doctor story. So there's a few bits and bobs coming up for pre-order on whowon.co.uk. And I did previously mention Doctor Who Magazine 550. You can also get 549 from whowon.co.uk. And something I really do need to get is the Faceless Ones animated reconstruction. Because there's a few that I haven't got, and I really do need to complete my collection. Yeah, that's about it, really, on the sponsorship front. Next week, I will just check nobody's said anything. Oh, we have got some stuff coming through. Neil James says, it does look like she's got it at home, which means she must have a costume at home. Wonder if Colin Baker's got it, got his. And then love Jody for doing that, talking about the Jody video. And then he says, it does look like she filmed it from her home, which means she has her costume at home with her, rather like Colin Baker used to do.
Costume, yeah. That's
he says, wonder if Colin Baker still has had his old coat. I think he does, but then he lent it to several sort of, not museums, exhibitions. Alistair Pearson has an exact replica of it, which appeared at FantasyCon behind Colin in a very good portrait photograph I took of said Colin.
Oh, Master? Oh,
what?
I was wondering, with the story we just discussed, Snake Dance, have you seen in any of the exhibitions or any of those props still in existence?
If like I had, I wouldn't remember if I had. There might be an old... I did post a video a long time ago, didn't I, when we went to the Blackpool exhibition. Was it an exhibition? The museum. When the kids were a lot younger. I did do a video. I'm fairly sure that's on the 20 megabyte page somewhere. Ooh,
I don't remember
archives.
That.
You don't?
No.
Well, if it ever shows up while I'm looking through old videos, I will extract it and publish it. But I'm pretty sure it was on there.
I'll look.
Certainly some photos. You got me thinking now, but I'm sure I published it. Maybe it's on YouTube. I can't remember. But I can't remember. They might, if you look at the video, they might
Which exhibition?
The Blackpool one. Which doesn't exist anymore, obviously.
I know.
But anyway, that's enough of that. Right, so next time, hopefully next week, we'll be looking at Mordrin Undead, which is the beginning of the another Black Guardian trilogy. And and of course it's the return, as alluded, of the Break. Everybody seen this one before? I think we've already
returned.
Yes, we've done this one before.
Yeah, I've seen this one before.
Okay, so we'll look forward to that.
I just did a search on YouTube for the word Blackpool for underneath 20 megabyte podcast, and you went to Blackpool Toys, Alicia in the ball pit at Blackpool Tower.
All right, we don't need a full list of the videos that are on my page. Thank you very much.
An exhibit.
Short answer would be no, it's not on there, and I can't do much about that at the moment. I thought it was on the Twigger, but there's certainly some photographs in existence on our photograph archive on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Anyway, like I said, next week. What?
I said which you can join.
Anyway, next week, Mordrin Undead. So until then, thank you for partaking in the show. Everybody stay well, but of course, if you are self-isolating, you can always watch and listen to this show. And if I can be bothered during the week, we might even do another little Doctor Who quiz via the old Trivial Pursuit questions. That was quite good fun, wasn't it, Debbie?
I like that.
Yes, it was. Shut up. Bye! I said that.
Sorry, mustache.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.